Okay, we want to talk about stress now. Strategies to overcome stress. I'm going to give you some more practical strategies. And the first one is the most important one. The first strategy to overcome stress is the most important, I think, of them all, the most helpful one. And that is, know the limits of your responsibilities. And we come to Paul, 2 Corinthians 10, 13 through 14. But we will not boast beyond our measure. In other words, we won't make a claim beyond the measure that God's given us. But rather within the measure of the sphere which God apportioned to us as our measure, to reach even as far as you. In other words, God's given us a sphere, and it includes you. It doesn't include those people or that city, but it includes you. For we are not overextending ourselves. How many of you guys have ever been overextended? For we are not overextending ourselves as if we did not reach you. In other words, we're not overextending ourselves and taking on more than what God gave us. For we were the first to come to you as far in the gospel of Christ. How many of you know many people take on things that are not their responsibility, and by doing so, they take on a lot of extra stress? So be cautious about taking on things, taking on responsibility, where you have no authority or assignment. So don't just... People want to put things on you, or you might just want to run after and take things on yourself, and yet you haven't been appointed to do it. You don't have the authority to carry the responsibility or to fix it. How many know there are many problems in society, and some people are so agitated by what's going on in the world around them? But you have to ask, what authority do I have? Well, I have one vote. I've got to be a good steward of that vote. I can contribute money to a cause I think is important. I can write a letter. I can send an email. You know, there's a limited amount of things I can do. God didn't make me president. I'm not the king of the world. So once I exercise the sphere of my authority, then I have to just give it to God, say a prayer, and go to sleep. And sleep like a baby. But so you got to know what it is that God has given you to do. What is it in your power to do? Now, God hasn't called me to be the sheriff of everyone and everything. Have you made that distinction for yourself? And he's not holding you responsible for how everything in the world turns out. It's hard to watch people make bad mistakes. It's hard to watch people walk away. But I cannot assume responsibility for someone who will not give me authority in their life. How many people have you ministered to? You've given them very good counsel, and they do not follow it because they haven't given you authority in their life. And so you can't put yourself under stress. They're not your responsibility. If somebody won't follow your advice, they are no longer your responsibility. And you just have to let them. I just say, well, honey, they're just going to have to take a couple more laps. You know, they got to run around the course a few more times. And we'll see what happens. If they wear themselves out a little bit, maybe they'll listen. Jesus gave us grace to carry the responsibilities he has given us, but not the responsibilities that we take onto ourselves. So there is a little exercise for you to do later. Really think this through. What are the things that God has given me responsibility for? You know, what things might you be carrying on yourself that you're really not called to carry? It's really not your responsibility. And then make a list of people God has given you responsibility for. That line's probably too short, but the major people that God's given you responsibility for? You know, who are the people God's really given you responsibility? Not just somebody who's visited, you know, not just somebody who used to be a neighbor of yours. It's good to care for people, but at some point we have to be able to focus on our responsibilities. You try to carry the whole world on your shoulders, you're going to get crushed. You know, you try to take on responsibility for what's going on in another church or in another group or something. It's not yours to carry. Number two, learn to delegate. Delegating is entrusting to others some responsibility or task that you could do yourself. Now, there's obvious advantages in delegating. Number one, it helps remove some of the burden off of you. Number two, it can free you to do something new and productive that you weren't able to get to before. And number three, and obviously, it helps to develop others. It gets them to buy in more. I heard someone in here when we were discussing, in fact, it was you, talking about how part of the pain of frustration is that people just won't buy in. You know, they just flit from group to group or thing to thing. So when you delegate, you help people to buy in. I've said this a lot. Dave and I noticed we had a church for years, like 3 or 4 years. And people were nice enough to come to Mark and Dave's church, you know. And then we got the property, and people had to pony up with money, and especially labor. Our church, our first building, we did it all. And there was a profound difference. Because I felt for the first time in like 4 years, I went from being Mark and Dave's church to our church. It was profound. So it helps you to get people to buy in. The obvious disadvantage is people can do a pretty bad job. The product sometime is not that good. And if you're a perfectionist, you really struggle that things aren't done well. It really bothers you. And you have to temper that with this knowledge that our main job is not to have a flawless performance, the perfect meeting. Our main job is to develop people. And that means a mess, you know? If you want to have life, if you want to have a clean, perfect house, don't have any kids. If you have kids, you're going to have mess, but that's because you made the decision that it's more important to develop little human beings than it is to have a good house. And so you want it to go well, but you have to just take yourself by the scruff of the neck and say it doesn't have to be perfect. Now, you can minimize the problems of delegation by practicing supervision. In other words, you just don't delegate and stand by and watch, you know, the ship go down or watch the person begin to spiral down and crash. You think you guys all know what supervision is? First of all, I do it and you watch me. Then we do it together. And then you do it, and here's the key. I supervise. Supervision is so important. Giving them feedback, you know, standing by, hearing their questions, giving them feedback. And then finally, the person can do it themselves. So let's just real quickly, let me just throw this out there. What is some things you've learned? Successes, failures of delegating. Some things you learned the hard way. What's worked, what hasn't. As you've tried to get people to buy in to the mission and to develop themselves, you know, to grow in leadership, what are some things you've seen?
Help them get ownership of it.
Yeah, who said that? Oh, yeah, how? How do you help them get ownership of it?
Well, first of all, something they like, and you notice, because a lot of times I'll be talking about it, and you can help them develop it by giving them ownership and saying, hey, well, how would you like to do that? Would you like to do a 5-minute session in the home group next week? And you're kind of like mentoring them and helping them through it. So you just, and then when they take ownership, and then you tell them, hey, you did a really good job. You should try to do this. Do it more.
Yeah.
And they take ownership of it because they don't realize they have it.
Mm-hmm.
They may not have that gift.
So you have to recognize people's gifting and help call that out. Very good. Very good. So we got their hand up. Jeremy.
You got to give them enough tips so they can be successful. You know, know, you just give someone something, they'll fail unless you give them the training, the understanding of what you want so they can be successful. And so you have to understand what they need to be successful and what you've delegated to them. So there's been times I've given someone a job to do something to take ownership over, and they just failed, and I realized really it was my failure because I didn't give them really what they needed, all the tools.
So you got to communicate really clearly what you want. Then you got to make sure that they've got some of the skills that they need to do it. Mike, that meter.
I think putting the right people in the right job, too, you know, like really be able to identify what their abilities are and what their skills are. And some people, that means challenging them to like take a step beyond what they're comfortable with. And some people, it means like holding them back a little bit or not giving them.
Or redirecting them.
Right. Like just trying to identify, like being a good judge of their abilities and capacity and where they're at.
Because it's a hard thing to set somebody up to fail. You know, and then afterwards you realize, I don't know why I put them in that position. It's my fault. Linda.
We often
Isn't she beautiful?
We often would get critics with really good discernment. They saw things clearly, and so I would invite them to help. And if they wouldn't help, I would just finally have to say, look, it's too discouraging to hear what you have to say when you won't help us make it better. So I really, I can't listen to that. I'm sorry. And that took a big burden off. They learned if I'm not going to help, I'm not going to offer my opinion.
Okay, here is a law. Responsibility and authority have got to be linked. In fact, I was talking to Marty. He was once given responsibility for something, but no authority. How many guys have been in that? That's a horrible place to be. But the reverse is well, too. You can't have any authority to speak into this if you won't take responsibility. You know, one of the things Dave and I joke about, we actually do it all the time, is people come up and they have this great idea. The church should do this. The church needs to do this. You know, that's a good idea. I'm so glad God gave it to you. And if God gave it to you, you're the person to do it. But, I mean, the fact is people can't just go around critiquing and taking authority for how things should be unless they're going to carry the weight. But at the same time, you need to give people authority once you've given them responsibility. I think all our staff feels that way. You feel like, when we give you authority, when we give you responsibility, we give you authority. Now you can like give it gradually as you test them, but okay, there was another hand. It was over here, I think. Who was it? Marty.
Whenever you delegate, you need to be willing to forgive and realize that forgiveness is going to be part of it. And also encourage that correction isn't rejection. As we work through this, you'll grow in it.
Right.
I always tell people, no, correction is not rejection. For a lot of things, they want to pull back and say, no. You're doing a good job, but we can improve this.
I have to realize that the person and developing the person is more important than the duty.
Yes. That's right. We're in the people development business. Jesus, you know, he put up with a lot from those guys, but he had his eye on the prize. He knew what he was doing. Anybody else want to add anything there?
Well, he did pick them.
Yeah, he knows how to pick them. He picked us.
Yeah.
So maybe he doesn't know how to pick them. Okay. Number three, okay. Oh, and here's the thing to think about. Who in your group is willing and motivated? Are there needs? Are there things that I need to delegate? So you might give that a thought later. Number three. This is how to deal with stress, how not to let stress become unresolved stress. Address problems immediately as they come up. Don't let them pile up waiting for a better time, because if left unchecked, problems can escalate. Now, as we said earlier, some things you need to step back and get a perspective and get your emotions under control before you address them. But just generally speaking, most problems need to be addressed as soon as possible. And here's along what you were saying. Don't avoid confronting problem people hoping they will take care of themselves. Because if you do that, if you won't address the problem person in the group, what'll happen? What'll happen? Yeah, people just drop out. They'll quit coming, and they'll drop out. And do you know the pain that you'll have from having friends quit coming to your group and drop out is a lot worse than addressing a problem situation. So be willing to address it. And by the way, I don't want this to sound negative, like, oh, it's so sad to be a leader, but somebody's got to do it. There's joy of leadership. There's joys and there's pains. It's just that nobody drops out because of the joys. And when I'm talking about longevity, so I'm talking about the things that make people burn out. Most people become home group pastors because they love people and they want to help, not because they want to be the sheriff. So it's something that all of us avoid, but somebody has to do it. Every town needs a sheriff. You know, every home group needs a sheriff. And people are counting on you to be it. And if you won't be it, they'll find somewhere where there is some governance going on. One of the things you can do if you're really having trouble, reach out to Jim Dealing or to one of the pastors, hopefully Jim, or even a more experienced. By the way, Jim told me that he's underutilized. Jim?
With home fellowship pastors.
Jim said that people are generally thinking he's real busy and they don't want to bother him. But this is probably your number one commitment.
Absolutely.
Is to minister to the, more important than anything else he does, is to minister and encourage and build up home fellowship pastors. So if you need some help, give him a call. Because one of the things is we have a little more probably experience in dealing with difficult people in a church setting. And also, sometimes we have a little more authority, which could help too. So you call Jim, call somebody, you can call one of the other pastors, and they may give you a really good strategy and help your group to move on with the minimum damage to group cohesion. So consider calling Jim. Okay, number four. Another way to deal with stress, get rid of stress. Replace unrealistic expectations with realistic expectations. Now, this is the key. Unrealistic expectations lead to stress, and then stress eventually leads to disillusionment. Why? Unrealistic expectations lead to stress because you start feeling stressed, like, what am I doing wrong? You know, where am I failing? Why isn't it happening like it's supposed to be happening? What is the problem? Who's to blame? And the problem is that your expectations are not realistic. And after you have wrestled and dealt with the stress and the frustration of unmet expectations, you become disillusioned. And who can you become disillusioned with? Well, first of all, yourself, right? And then second of all, people. People are no good. I'm inadequate. The gospel doesn't work. The Bible doesn't have power. I mean, it could be anything because things haven't measured up to your expectations. Disillusionment is one of the most debilitating conditions you can ever operate under when you are disillusioned. When I was at College Center, I'd only been, like I said, from the day I gave my life back to Christ, I was in ministry almost. And so I'd been in ministry the whole time and I'd had some great successes and stuff. So I went into this church and I thought, you know, I'm God's man of faith and power. You know, watch out. You know, God is faithful. God can do anything. And I walked into this situation and I gave it my heart and soul. I used to say it was like the immovable object meeting the irresistible force. And no, I don't know, nothing happened. I just broke myself on that rock. And it was unrealistic because there were a lot of factors I didn't take into account because I wasn't wise enough. A lot of dynamics going on in church. It was a good church. I'm not saying anything wrong with the church, but it was very ethnic in the sense that almost everybody was from Scandinavia. They liked it that way. So if you weren't from Scandinavia, you didn't feel very welcome if your name wasn't Carlson or something like that. It was just the dynamics. They weren't, you know, it just wasn't a place I could really grow a ministry. And so it was unrealistic, and I became disillusioned. And as I told you, I turned to Linda and I said, I don't know how I miss God, but I am not called to be a pastor or be in the ministry. And here I've just spent 4 years in college, 3 years in seminary, all my money. You know, I've got 2 kids to take care of, and I've got no skills. I mean, you know, I haven't got a career other than this, and I miss God. I don't know how I missed him, but I missed him. That's disillusionment, first of all, in myself. And that was a little disillusion probably in God to a degree, but mostly all in myself. Disillusionment comes because we are operating with illusions. Therefore, remember, disillusionment is actually a gift because it allows you to move forward with clarity and understanding. So maturity requires living beyond naive expectations and getting beyond the disillusionment, which is on the other side of naive expectations. So what are some things that you can be disillusioned about or that you have been? Just a couple of thoughts. What are some things that you think you can become disillusioned in or that you have? You can, for instance, in the church you belong to.
I went through a period where my home fellowship, I was like, you know what, I'm not attracting the right people. All these people are, like, lacking in some way.
Dude, brother, I hear you. I got a church just like that.
So I went around, I said, you know, I must be doing something wrong. So I went and visited a couple home fellowships, and I felt much better about it.
Yeah. You know, Jesus just needs to raise his standards. He's got to let more of the good kind of people in and less of the...
By the way, I have a really good home fellowship.
Good. So you can become... in that case, you became mostly disillusioned in the people, but then also in yourself a little bit.
Well, that's what it turned out, because the people really haven't
changed. So you're saying it was more in yourself.
Yeah.
What else?
I think you've said it before too. Like, if it wasn't for illusions, you probably wouldn't start any ministry.
Yeah.
But I've started a few ministries, and you always have this illusion of how great it's going to be. And then when you get into the thick of it, it's just like, what did I get myself into?
Yeah.
You know, and you're stretched thin, and that's really when I get disillusioned. It's like, you know, probably the 6 month mark of starting something new, or
yeah.
When we left college, we tried to start family groups. Like trying to, it was really hard.
Yeah. And that's a good point. Illusions aren't altogether bad. Because if it wasn't for illusions, there'd be no marriages and there'd be no children. You know, there'd be nobody, a lot of businesses would never get started. If everyone didn't think it was going to be easier than it was going to be, if everyone knew how hard it was going to be, right? So illusions, I never try to disillusion people too much. I just try to temper their illusions. You know, so I don't feel like it's my job to go to young people and tell them, oh dude, you don't even know how hard it's gonna be. When Linda and I were getting married, we got so frustrated. Every single person we talked to when we said we're gonna get married, except for Christians, just strangers would go, you don't want to get married. Did you guys get that? Oh my gosh, we heard it all the time, didn't we, honey?
Well, we got it from Christians. Oh.
Anyway, number 5. Unless you have something.
Yeah, a leader once told me, if the proof of you being a good leader is if people follow you, and I thought that was the truth, but and because of him speaking that into my life, I've felt like a failure as a leader a lot, because I look and I see the struggle of loving people and not feeling like they're receiving it or following my leadership. So for many years, feeling disillusioned from that, what a man of God spoke over me.
Yeah.
That if you're a leader, people will follow you.
Yeah. Because everybody has a choice to make. And you can give the best advice and the greatest love. I mean, we, even parents. And yet people can choose not to do the right thing, not to follow through, not to respond rightly. Number five, learn to focus on your resources and not your limitations. The question is always, or let me put it this way, the question is never, what do I lack? What don't I have? The question is always, what do I have? You always have something. You always have enough to start. If you learn to work with what you have, more will come later because God is faithful. I love this story of Moses in Exodus 4, 1 through 5. God appears to Moses and tells him to go to Israel and set all his people free from Egypt. Of course, Moses is completely overwhelmed. He begins to say, I don't have an army. I don't have any power. I'm not a king. I don't speak well. I don't have any connections. You see these sheep? They're not even my sheep. I'm taking care of somebody else's sheep. And God says, okay, well, it's all true, but what do you have? What's that in your hand? Remember that? What's that in your hand? It's a staff. Oh, you're a shepherd. You know, I can use a shepherd to shepherd my sheep. Take that staff and throw it down on the ground. It became a snake. It became a miracle. So it's always, what do I have? That's always the question. Never, what do I miss? I won't go into stories, but our whole church has been starting with nothing. When God first, forgive me for sharing this example again, but when God first called me to start the Youth Ventures, the church was about 300 people. We had no money. We had nothing. I had a dream that God gave me. I had a car. I had a phone. So I could drive my car around and look up properties. I could use my phone to find out how much they were. I could share the vision with friends. And I mean, that's what we had to start. We had nothing more than that. We didn't have any money. We had to raise the money. And it's the same thing with the schools that we started. We had nothing. You know, we had literally nothing. Everything we've ever done. So, but you always have enough to start. So the question is, what do I presently have to work with? Not what do you need or what would it be helpful to have or when I get this thing, then I can start. You always have something to start with, always. Like I said, I had a phone and I had a car. I could drive around. I could meet kids. I could, you know, maybe you can call, use your phone to call somebody who has some information that you could glean. Or have some experience to share. You always have something to start with. And in your lives and in your groups, start with what you have. Don't add stress and worry by focusing on what you don't have. It takes patience and time to reach our dreams and our God-given goals. Don't keep comparing what you have today with what you hope to have tomorrow. Don't keep saying, well, this is nothing compared to what I'm believing God for, dreaming for. Don't despise today's accomplishments because they seem small in comparison to what you hope to accomplish. All great accomplishments begin with tiny accomplishments. They're all built on the back of something small and seemingly relatively insignificant. Sixth way to overcome stress and deal with it. Find better methods and strategies. Find a better way of doing it. Read a book. Seek out mentors. There are mentors out there. There's more people that want to help than there are people who are willing to be helped. And a person who's willing to be helped is a person who's willing to do something with it. Not just show up and feel sorry for themselves, but, you know, do something. There are people that want to mentor, people that want to learn. Learn to Google, for instance, how to resolve conflicts with people. So you got people in your group and they're coming to you for advice. Well, if you know what they want to talk to you about, spend an hour Googling and getting some good articles. how to deal with anxiety. You can just get a few quick pointers. How to minister, you know, if you have a family and they're dealing with homosexual children, just Google it. How to minister to homosexual teens, homosexual Christian teens. You know, it always amazes me. I get calls and people want to ask me like a deep theological question or some specific thing. And, you know, I'll be in my car driving and the call comes across Bluetooth and they'll ask me this question. I'll think, wow, I'm really flattered that you think while I'm sitting here at this stoplight talking to you on Bluetooth, that off the top of my head, I'm going to have some better information than you could find online. Thank you. I feel very good about myself. You know, you're going to get like a quick response. What I'm just trying to say is everything you could want to know, the wisdom of the universe, is online. And there's articles, right? Just you can just spend 15 minutes reading an article, and you can go out into that counseling situation, into that ministry situation, and you can have some gems to give them. You don't have to pull it just off the top of your head. So that's important. Find better methods and strategies. If you know what the difficulty is, use Google. So here are the questions. First of all, what book might I read to help me grow in my ministry? By the way, I want to ask for some recommendations. I know I asked Jim. What are some recommendations that you would suggest for someone who's a home fellowship pastor couple that would help them grow personally or particularly ministry-wise? I think you had a couple.
Ants, Vines.
Oh, yeah, Charles Simpson's books. How many of you guys have read Ants, Vines, and Flower Pots?
Churches.
Ants, Vines, and Churches.
Yeah.
How many of you guys have read that book? Oh, come on. None of you guys have read it? Like four, six of you? Is it still in the library or the church? What a great book. Ants, Vines, and Flower Pots. I'm kidding. I like mine better. Ants, Vines, and Churches. Great book. What else?
One other required reading for all Home Fellowship pastors of Foothill Church is On Earth as It Is in Heaven by, who was that? But it's a great overview of the kingdom of God and how we get the kingdom of God, how to access the power of the kingdom of age and how it all works. So it's great.
Well, thank you, Jim. You guys recommend any of the books that you think have been really helpful to you?
I want to have in my truck actually now. It's called Eternal Impact.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about having kingdom focus and kingdom minded small groups. And it's one of the best books I've ever read.
Eternal Impact by who?
Ken
Hemphill, okay, he's written quite a bit. Anybody else got a book they want to recommend? Who's read a book in the last 5 years? Okay, 3, 4, 5, 6, okay. Any other books you want to recommend? There's three, we got three, that's plenty. Sorry.
Because I have kids, I know a lot of people have kids, and as long as you're shepherding a child's heart, it's super good. It's a good feel like, hey, you have kids, you must know everything about it. I'm like half a step ahead of you, man. I'm like trying to give people advice, and I'm still figuring it out.
And who wrote that? Shepherding us?
Ted Tripp.
And you said Extreme Ownership?
Yeah, by Jocko Willink. I don't think he's a Christian, but he has the excellent principles of leadership. And Dave's book, The Fear of the Lord, Beginning of Discipleship, is great because it addresses the gigantic failure in our society to fear the Lord.
Yeah, in a very practical way with the very issues that people in your group are dealing with. Okay, so what book might I read? Am I making use of the mentors available to me? Well, Jim's already said he's underutilized. There are mentors, there are people. And third, is there a home fellowship pastor that I respect that I could learn from? Just to call, just to bounce things off of. We need to expand our circle that we're making decisions out of and ministering out of. Okay, let's get on to the third section. which is precursors to burnout. These are some, I won't call them warning signs, they're things that are on the road to burnout, that lead to burnout. And the first one is feeling dry spiritually, feeling like you are depleted and you have little to give. I think everybody at some point has been there. They feel depleted, like they just don't have much more to give. Have you guys ever heard of this saying? I should have written it down. You guys might want to. If your output exceeds your input, then your upkeep will be your downfall.
Yes.
So if you're giving out more than you're taking in, then just trying to balance life, just trying to keep it going, is going to do you in. So if your output exceeds your input, then your upkeep will be your downfall. One danger of being elevated to leadership is this, and this is universal. A subtle shift takes place in our minds. And we can forget that we're still part of the flock that needs to be cared for, tended, and fed. This is a thing that we've seen all the way from worship team to ushers to you name it. As soon as you put somebody on a worship team, they play their gig, and the tendency is they're going to go hang out in the green room until they're needed again. Now, that doesn't happen because Hank would kill them. Where are you, Hank? Hank would never. We don't do that, but that's tendency. You go from being a person in the audience that's really listening and getting ministered to, you know, you're on the platform now. I mean, it's just a subtle thing, and you're going to hang out with the other people. Same thing with the ushers. You know, the tendency is, a human nature is, that they do their ushing, and then they hang out. You know, it's like you move from being part of the, you know, the audience of the play to being an actor, and it's a subtle thing. And you quit forgetting, you've quit thinking, I need ministry. I need to pay attention. I need to be in class. I need to hear the sermon. I need to be worshiping. We can become so busy caring, another one, for the needs of others that we neglect our own devotional or spiritual life. And here's one thing. Beware of reading the Bible primarily to try and get a Bible teaching out of it. You know, where it's pretty soon, instead of going to the Bible to hear from God and do your devotions, it's primarily a book that you're trying to develop a lesson out of. Learn to say no to some demands and work everything around your own private devotional times of seeking God. So, you know, it's like that old thing where you have the glass jar, and if you put the sand in it first, all the rocks won't fit. But if you put the rocks in it first, the sand. You have to just decide, okay, these are my family times. These are my devotional times. You know, and this is what's left over. This is what I have. So you can't just have that stuff thinking you're going to get to it when you get to it. You've got to work everything around the things that keep you going. You know, it's like on the plane. They say, you know, when the oxygen mask come down, you put it on yourself first and then the kid. Because if you don't get oxygen in, you're not going to be able to help the kid. So it's the same thing in ministry. If we don't stay filled, if we don't have a plan, if we're not making a priority to our own life in the Lord, then pretty soon we will dry out. Here's another one I think is important, for me anyway. Have others, in addition to your spouse. Your spouse can be the first line, but have others you can confide in that will help you read your gauges. I was well into being an adult. I don't know, I might have been in my 40s, early 40s, before I finally realized I'm not very good at reading my own gauges. I'm just one of these guys that, like, you know, just puts my head down and plows through to the next thing and think I'm doing fine. You know, just throws things off and deals with them, and without realizing that actually I'm not allowing myself to feel how frustrated I am, and then I'll blow up, or how discouraged I am, and then I'll collapse. And I realize I'm really not good at reading my own gauges. You know, I mean, there's the dashboard, and I'm so busy driving, I'm just not paying attention, that it's on the red line. And I'm just bombing down the road. No problem, I'll take another one. Yeah, put another one in the back seat, you know. So I feel like, you know, we need to have somebody that knows who we are and can say to us, and it might be a spouse. I mean, usually it's a spouse first, but it's good to have other people because you got the dynamics going on in the house already. So sometimes it's good if somebody that's not involved in that can say, you know what, it just seems like you've been really unavailable. You know, and whenever I talk to you, your mind's somewhere else and you're kind of short-tempered. You know, somebody that can just pick those things out and say, dude, you know, what's going on? Are you overloading? Are you overstressing? Number two, which leads right into that. So help read your gauges and especially Jim Dealing. Again, another play for Jim. He's there. He's ready to help you. Number two, another thing that's a precursor to burnout, trying to do too much. It takes devotion to be a leader and be a home fellowship pastor. In order for that to be a priority, some other things have to be deprioritized. How many know it's easy to become overcommitted to unimportant things? I'll help out. I'll make cupcakes for the, you know, the PTA or the, and that's a good thing to do, but sometimes, like, you just can't ever say no. And so you're always bringing cupcakes to everything, or you're always showing up early to set up to everything. And sometimes you have to say no to some things. Sometimes, honestly, your plate can become so full with high priority demands in your own life that it's okay to step away from ministry for a while. It doesn't mean, it's not a forever quit, but, you know, we value you people. First and foremost, you are valuable people of God. You're children of God, first and foremost. You're not valued for what you can do. You're not valued for the service that you give to the church. First and foremost, you're valued for who you are. And you're more important than what you do. And if you need to have a break, you're not going to get criticized for it. You're not going to get, we're not going to question your commitment to Jesus. Sometimes things come up at home, at family. And so, you know, I'm not encouraging you. You know, sometimes you just got to push through some, you know, difficult seasons, and it's a bump and you get past it. But if you try to do too much, it's going to end badly for everybody. We don't want people to go beyond their limit and then leave feeling used, feeling abused, embittered. That's the last thing in the world that we want to happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do, right.
Whatever it is, right? I'm never gonna, you know,
yeah,
a really cool hot rod because I got other things that are more important in my life. Right?
Exactly. So you got to be willing to fail at them. You might give a try, and you end up might not really turning out too good because you don't have the energy to put into that. Right. But you're not going to fail up either. That's a good point. That was wise of you to quote me. Well, when I said that's a good point, then I realized it was my point. There was no way out of it after that. I might as well just go all the way down the ship. Let's see, try to do, okay. Number three, living with a sense of failure. It's another thing that's a precursor to burnout, living with a sense of failure. And that can come when you compare yourself to other home group pastors, to other groups. Because every group is going to have time. Every home group pastor is going to have to deal with times where their group is not growing, or it's stagnant, or maybe they're losing members, where it seems like nothing's happening. It's just part of the season of, it's the circle of life. It's just that Simba. It's part of the reality of it. There are going to be times where you had some people move away and you had some people drop out, and it seems like you've lost your momentum. And it's even worse when we compare ourselves with other groups. We hear people saying, oh gosh, that home group pastor over there, he's such a good teacher. He's so funny. You know, the house they meet in is so good. And, they got the best worship leader. So, you know, it's easy to compare yourself. I mean, that is so, I'll tell you, it's really hard for pastors because, you know, we're not just competing with the pastor down the church. We're competing with every pastor in America that has a podcast or that's on, YouTube or something. And it's very discouraging for pastors that they're continually being compared to some superstar who might be a complete loser, but nobody knows because all they get is the polished production. But we all deal with that, you know, and it makes us feel like we're inadequate. And especially when you're going through a rough time, you know, you have a say in how your group goes, but so do the people, you know, and you can't teach a pig to sing sometimes. Okay, not that you have any pigs in your group. I'd rather teach them to pig than I'd rather teach them to sing than fly, though. But enough about that. Can this be salvaged? Okay, number four, being criticized and abandoned by people that you have tried to serve. It hurts when people you have really loved and felt like they were friends just quit coming, maybe without a word, or maybe with some hollow excuse, and you don't know why. And then maybe you hear later from a third party that they're being critical. You're hearing some criticism. Maybe it's not even about you. Maybe it's about the church. But if you love your group and you love our church, it's going to hurt a little bit. You know what I mean? Because you're give. It's the more you invest of yourself, the more they're leaving feels like a reflection. I don't know how to put it. I mean, if I just attend a church, I don't really care what people say about it that much. But if you give your heart and your soul and your blood and your sweat and your tears and they criticize the church, you kind of can't help by taking that a little bit personal. Well, you're criticizing the people I love. These are people I love. These are people that have ministered to me. These are people that, you know, I know they would be there for me in a heartbeat, and I've seen them sacrifice. I mean, so the more invested you are, the more difficult it is. And we're living in a society now where people just, oh my goodness, they just change for change's sake. There's very little sense of loyalty. Loyalty is an issue that's important. Everything is built on keeping promises and being loyal to commitments. And so that can be discouraging. Number five, the last one I want to talk about, is marital and family problems. And this might be a good time for some testimonies. Share some of the marital problems. Just kidding. That wasn't in my notes. Every marriage and family goes through times of special stress and difficulty. It can be brought on by financial pressures, if you own a business, being out of work. It can be because of kid problems. Your kids are making bad choices. You know, your kids are sneaking behind your back or something, and it brings special stress into the family. And sometimes we can attempt to hide these because we're afraid that if people know what's really going on, we're going to lose respect. We might even lose our ministry if they really know what's going on. And as you're going through these things, sometimes it can make you feel like a hypocrite. This is pretty universal. If you're struggling in some area of your life, at home or something like that, it can make you feel like a complete hypocrite because you're trying to teach people how to live the overcoming Christian life, and you're looking at yourself and going, I'm struggling. Well, if the struggle's bad enough, then come and talk to us. Maybe it's appropriate that you step back. That's fine. People step back. There's times where you got to deal with issues in your own life. But generally speaking, somebody wrote a famous book, Henry Nouwen, I think, called The Wounded Healer. Did anybody read it? I never read it, but it's a great title, isn't it? The Wounded Healer. And it's just the fact that there are no perfect ministers. And, you know, everybody's struggling. And so it's a level, there can be a certain level at which it is appropriate for you to get out. But, you know, having difficulties in your marriage that are not extreme is not a reason why you can't be a good minister. Having imperfect kids is not a reason. You know, we have in the Bible, there are standards for elders, and those are really pastors. And, you know, the higher you go up in church leadership, the higher the standards, right? And so, you know, it says that if the guy has a pastor and his kids aren't, you know, in order, he shouldn't be a pastor, you know. Well, you know, there's certain standards for an elder, but everybody in the church almost has difficulty with their kids. So I'm just saying, you know, you might want to come and talk to Jim and tell him what's going on, but you know, don't feel like you're disqualified or you're a hypocrite if you're teaching the truth and you're attempting to live the truth. And you do have areas, a lot of victory in your life in various areas, you're qualified. So here's one more thing about sharing, though. And that is, I think you guys all know this. You have to be wise. There are levels of transparency that you have with different people. So you can be 100% transparent with the pastoral staff. You can just let it all hang out, be completely honest. And then you've got some leadership, people in leadership, you know, people that are like peers, and you can be pretty transparent with them. But when you get to the group, you have to be wise in what you share. So being transparent doesn't mean being transparent with everybody. Being transparent and accountable means that you're transparent and accountable with somebody, right? I mean, if you're transparent and accountable with somebody in leadership, then you're transparent and accountable. It doesn't have, you know, you don't have to let it all hang out. So, you know, there are things that you don't need to bring up to people you're ministering to. And you can get some counsel and perspective on that. You know, like if you get some counseling and you can drive through issues. But people need to have a sense that they're in a safe place and they have confidence in the leadership. And some of them can't deal with much, particularly people that maybe come from an abused background or they're so quick. I just had a meeting yesterday with someone where I had to undo the damage that came from a previous meeting. And it really wasn't anything I said. It all had to do with their upbringing and the filters that they, you know, the lenses and the filters by which they filter life. So we had to go through it all again. And I don't feel like I did anything wrong in that original setting. So you have to be wise that there are some people in your group that you just have to be thoughtful in what you share. So there's a list. List of trustworthy and wise people you have access to help you in problem times. And I don't mean necessarily now, but later. That's probably an easy one. But I really hope you guys take this home and work through some of these discussion things. Life, I'm going to start winding it up now. Life is a long line of transitions. Every transition involves a loss and probably a gain. You lose something in every transition, but you gain something. You gain new opportunities. Growth always involves change, and change always involves loss. Whenever something changes, you lose something, but you gain something too. So if you're unwilling to face the pain of loss and the pain of change, then you'll never get to the blessing that you're supposed to get to. You'll never see it. Only if you're willing to manage pain and stress can you see what God has for you. Change should never be feared. On the other hand, change should never be simply pursued for its own sake. I mean, there's a lot of people that just love change for its own sake. We should pursue every change that God calls us to, but only the changes that God calls us to. I want to finish up with a scripture. Last 2 minutes here. 1 Timothy 4, 6 through 8. It's Paul's famous words. Paul was fruitful and Paul had longevity. He was a finisher. Like the original disciples, apostles, he didn't quit. He didn't burn out. He didn't become unfruitful. 1 Timothy 4, 6 through 8. Yes.
People didn't minister to him, but or continue with him.
Well, apparently it's been removed from my Bible. I didn't lock the door last night. Okay, 1 Timothy, my goodness gracious. My mind was somewhere else, he said as a plausible excuse. 1 Timothy 4, 6 through 8, in pointing out these things, no, that wasn't it. No, it's not. Maybe it's 2 Timothy. That's why it says it's 2 Timothy. Okay, 2 Timothy 4, 6 through 8. I am already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure has come. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the course. I have kept the faith. In the future, there is laid up for me in the crown of righteousness, which the Lord will award to me and all those who have loved his coming. He finished the course. He was fruitful. He completed his assignment. Over the last few years, I've been giving some thought to finishing well and staying as fruitful as possible, even though I've been experiencing declining health, strength, increasing fatigue. And so I've given these issues a lot, and I want to just finish with two thoughts. Number one. Strength and ministry opportunities both diminish with age. I don't have to say anything about strength diminishing with age because you all know that. I'm going through the same thing you guys are going through. I'm just going through it 5 or 6 times as fast. I'm just on the acceleration, curve. But you're all experiencing that. But also ministry opportunities diminish with age. Of course, one of the reasons is because if you have less energy, you're going to be engaged in less ministry. But also, as we go through the stages of life, we begin to be surrounded by people who are less open to change, right? It's the younger people that are flexible and change and make life-changing decisions. It happens less and less. And the older we get, the less we're around young people, but also the less influence we have. Up after a certain point, your influence begins to diminish. I've really seen this at Youth Venture with myself. And so here's what I've learned. One thing. Since strength and ministry opportunities diminish with age, I have learned that I can be fruitful if I shift my focus to being an encourager. If my shift in focus begins to encourage younger people, other people, there's that old saying, young men rejoice in success and old men rejoice in successors. And that has to be a switch. I was talking today about someone. I was talking at the break with someone that was involved in a ministry, and the person was not really able to do the ministry because I was talking at two people at break, now that I think about it, two people at break, two different stories. And the founder, the person that really got it going, was no longer really able to do the job, but they wouldn't let go of the authority. They couldn't shift that role to being an encourager, to being an enabler. And if you want to stay fruitful as you get older, and a lot of you guys are young, but you've got to be able to shift from having your identity as being the doer to being the encourager. And that means, invest in their ministry, invest in their life. Find out ways to make them to free them up to ministry and encourage them and help them when they're discouraged. And the second thing about finishing well and longevity is to realize this. Over time, cynicism can develop in your ministry. And we said that if people didn't have illusions, they wouldn't get started. Okay? So then once you get past your illusions and you're disillusioned, you either quit or you find better motivation. Okay? So I start out with something because I think I'm gonna start this church and everybody's gonna wanna come because it's my church. You know, and because it's going to be easy. And I'm going to preach Jesus and they're going to get saved. And I'm going to like pick them up off the ground and I'm going to just set them on their feet. And man, they're just going to walk on and serve Jesus from that point on. And, you know, within 6 years, I'll have an army of discipled people just walking on. And then you get into it and, you know, maybe not quite so much that it happened that way. So you start to get cynical because you were motivated to do it for this reason. You were expecting this and it didn't come out. So now you become cynical. Now what you have to do is you have to find the right motivation. And I've been involved in ministry for 40 years. And some of it, a lot of evangelism, a lot of it with youth. And there's a lot of disappointments. People let you down. They fail you. They betray you. They bite you. And I've had people ask me, how do you keep doing it after 40 years? And I've shared this before and I'll share it again. There is only one motivation that will allow you to be a finisher, to have longevity, to not burn out, to not quit. And this is what your motivation has to be. My motivation is to bring pleasure to Jesus, to help him carry his burdens, to lift his burdens and to make him happy. And anything else that happens is just the cherry. It's just benefit. So I would go through a situation and I would walk through that, you know, maybe showing a lot of grace or a lot of mercy or patience with someone. And I would just drive away and I would just think, I just brought pleasure to Jesus. You know, if that's your goal, to just bring pleasure to Jesus, if you think that way and you can, you see, God loves to share his pleasure. Remember that famous line about the runner, chariots of fire? And he was trying to run and his sister was trying to tell him, no, it's not God's will that you run. And he said, I know it's God's will. And she said, how? And he said, because I feel his pleasure when I do it. And, you know, if you're going through ministry and you're feeling the Lord's pleasure on what you're doing and you're knowing that you pleased him, that's going to be the motivation in heaven, right? In heaven, all the motivation is that you're pleasing him. So if that's your motivation, you can please him. And everything else is just, and there will be other stuff. You know, there's never enough other stuff to keep you highly motivated through the years. But there's a lot of good stuff, a lot of joy, a lot of happiness, a lot of love comes back. But that's got to be the icing on the cake. I would just like to close us in prayer, and then Jim's going to come up. Heavenly Father, I want to just thank you, Lord, for your goodness. I want to thank you that you've given us the opportunity of helping you carry your burden, of being your co-worker, of knowing the power of your resurrection and this fellowship that's in your sufferings. Pray, Lord, that you would draw nearer to each and every one of us and that we would experience your goodness all throughout our ministry. I pray that we would be finishers, that you would continually strengthen us. I pray for the fellowship of these people here, that they would grow in love for one another, in service to one another, in Jesus' name. And Lord, I want to just thank you for Jim Dealing and Lord, just the tremendous leader he is in our home fellowships, Lord. Bless him in Jesus' name. Amen.